Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master show. Here we explore what it takes to build world-class finance functions. Today, I'm joined by Katrina Nagy, a CPA and technical accounting expert who specializes in complex cross-border transactions and US GAAP conversions. So already there, I'm kind of sure to be learning something today, but she works with companies preparing for US investor engagement or IPO readiness, often helping them navigate multi-jurisdictional challenges across several countries. Beyond her technical expertise, Katrina also brings a unique approach as a solo advisor, offering agility, deep knowledge transfer, and a fee structure that sets her apart from the big firms. And I can certainly emphasize with that also being a small player, sometimes going up against the big companies as well. Anyway, in this episode, we'll dig into why cross-border conversions are so challenging, what makes her model different, and how CFOs can prepare their teams for success in today's global environment. So, Katrina, welcome to the show. You've been working on a major GAAP conversion for a UK tech company, I could see, preparing for a US IPO. Why are cross-border conversions so complex, especially when multiple countries are involved?
Well, first of all, thanks for the introduction. That was very thorough. So we're just going to dive right into it here. And hopefully you can see that I'm an expert in everything that you just named about me. So like you said, I work exclusively in the cross-border transaction space. And a lot of my first, projects and foot in the door with companies is to take them through accounting conversions in the process of potentially going public or bringing in some sort of US stakeholder. And it's typically a type of project that you don't really ever need a full-time person in-house for, because the process of going through an accounting conversion is such a specific skill set that unless you're a huge company that has like a big M&A department, you probably don't need that as like a recurring skill set in your team. And like you mentioned, most of the other alternatives are just going to much larger firms. So I kind of have this sweet spot working with scale-up companies. And like you mentioned, I'm working with one right now that's UK headquartered, but they have, I think, like 5 different subsidiaries around Europe, one in the US as well. And they're getting ready to go through first time US consolidated audits in the preparation of going public because they have some large US investors that they've brought in. And so, regardless of how companies want to utilize me, I can either do the full, accounting conversions from A to Z, help them through the audit, the financial statements, et cetera, or I walk them through the process and I just come in for bits and pieces of it where you really need my expertise. And then there are some places that I could also lean on their internal team. I'm sure we'll get to that a little bit later. But regardless of where you're using me in that process, obviously the more subsidiaries and the more local jurisdictions you have, the more complex this is going to be. And in a lot of ways, doing kind of a one-to-one conversion to just say like, oh, I'm just in the UK, I'm going to the US, the process is relatively similar in terms of assessing, what types of transactions you have, how they roll up to your statements, what are your current accounting policies. But of course, there's another layer of complexity when you're dealing with multiple subsidiaries across different European countries, and you've never done a proper consolidation under a more quote-unquote sophisticated standard like IFRS or US GAAP before. And in a lot of cases, what I see is not even necessarily that they don't have a cohesive way of doing that consolidation so far, because of course you can't, every European country has its own set of statutory requirements just for that specific entity. And if you haven't had a reason to do that type of consolidation, you're obviously not going to spend the time and the effort. But the bigger challenge is when the finance team is also disaggregated between the different countries and they don't really know what the other ones are doing. Like, for example, if you've made acquisitions in different countries and the finance teams are still in place, that becomes a real struggle to go through an accounting conversion, because it's also just like bringing together all of these different parties within your own organization, figuring out and kind of peeling back the layers of like, what are you actually doing currently? And is that appropriate per whatever local requirement you have, and then kind of adding in the additional layers to eventually get you to US GAAP. So it just adds another layer of complexity and probably more people to bring along on the journey, but that's also you know, a great reason to go through that process and to have that documentation built up, because then as you grow and you onboard new team members or expand into other jurisdictions, that kind of baseline's already set.
I can relate to it, even though I haven't gone through such a process myself, simply because having worked in a large global company, you see kind of, okay, what does it look once you have gone through, not necessarily, you know, mergers and acquisitions, but just having subsidiaries all around the world where you need to go from local books to IFRS or US GAAP, whatever your reporting standards are. You have intercompany, you have FX, you have transfer pricing, you have all these things that I could imagine you don't necessarily consider upfront when you do these things, but suddenly they really grow on you. And it's just such a headache if things are not done correctly from the beginning. Is that also what you see sometimes when maybe coming back into companies after they have gone through such a process?
Yeah, definitely. It's something, like I said, I try to kind of set the groundwork for those companies so that they can manage it going forward. And we can kind of talk about that knowledge transfer process and what that looks like. But it's just a helpful exercise. Even if you don't have to go through an accounting conversion, but you're getting ready for an audit, you're typically having to consolidate under some sort of framework across your different entities. So it's a good opportunity to kind of pause and take some time to actually set up the proper policies that you want and have those documented correctly.
No, that makes good sense. I mean, I was just with let's call it a scale up earlier today. They are also doing quite a lot of acquisitions, not the US, but around Europe. And you can just see how the complexity grows by every deal that they are making. And then they're sitting there as a finance team coming together and thinking, should we consolidate systems? Should we, you know, unify processes? All these things where you're like, yes, you should, but you also kind of know that it's probably not going to happen, right? So the complexity just grows exponentially also on the other side. But, you know, just the complexity of going through what you just outlined here is already something I could imagine would give CFO headaches. So on that note, what are some of the biggest pitfalls for CFOs to watch out for when aligning local accounting frameworks with US GAAP, for instance?
I think it kind of touches on, you know, what we were just discussing, that at least if you have a good understanding of what you're doing currently in an entity across all of the different jurisdictions that you're responsible for, that's going to make the process of going through an accounting conversion or getting ready for a consolidated audit a lot easier. Even if you've had separate statutory audits before, it's a very different type of scale to go through an audit, especially in the US. And so it just helps to have kind of as over documentation rather than under documentation, for sure. And another thing that I see a lot of times when I take companies through accounting conversions is at the end, when we sit down and go through the differences between what they're doing now and what they need to do to get to the US standard, I would say about 50% of those differences aren't even true, like GAAP differences that you would see in one of those fancy PDFs, IFRS to US GAAP or whatever. It's really an issue of like what they're actually doing currently versus what some theoretical standard says that they should be doing, because those two things sometimes aren't aligned, either because there's not as much guidance under statutory requirements, that there hasn't been the specificity for how they should be accounting for it, or because that hasn't been material enough previously, where they've kind of been maybe lax about some schedules. And so it's not even just assessing like what are the accounting differences, it's like how do we actually step up your entire processes and policies up to where they need to be to get through an audit.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, right? Because it's not just the technical aspect of what you're kind of your core offering, but it's really that opportunity to say, okay, we need to go through all your accounting processes to ensure that what you're doing is not just, you know, we can convert it, but it's actually up to standard the way it needs to be. Because of course, yes, like you said, many companies, maybe at some point they set something up and it was compliant with something, but one is standards evolves, and two is if the company grows, you typically don't grow your compliance and keeping up with standard in the same way. So, you know, I think that what you just described there is really a big added value that I hope you're trying to sell to your client as well, because I'm sure that that gives a lot of benefits also. So again, I'm probably going to say the complex or complicated word many times here today, but it is obviously a complex process. So how do you approach knowledge transfer in these projects so that the client's team and their auditors, whoever, are fully equipped for the journey also when you're not there anymore?
Yeah, so I've always kind of prided myself on this when I went independent and started working for myself. I spent a long time with PwC, so I've seen kind of how the audits are run from an auditor side. I've spent a lot of time in their capital markets and accounting advisory group, so I've also been kind of on the advisor side. And then I spent 3 years in private equity, so I've kind of been in the client's shoes as well in industry. And so I knew kind of going independent, I wanted to work really like more shoulder to shoulder with my clients as just like a one woman show, as opposed to coming in with a team of 10 people and kind of taking away a project and doing it in a black box. Cause that also, again, kind of worked just to the model for how I'm working independently. But over time, as I listened to my clients and worked with them, I've kind of evolved that process even further. In the past year or so, even, I had a client from the UK last year that came to me initially asking for a US GAAP workshop, and kind of unpeeled, like, what does that mean? Do you just want me to send you like 30-minute YouTube video? It could mean a lot of things. But we ended up realizing that they actually needed to go through a US GAAP conversion as they're setting up a US subsidiary because they have some specific regulatory requirements there. And so I ended up basically taking my GAAP conversion approach and my framework that I follow and tacking on what I kind of branded as a GAAP summit at the end of it, where we sit together after I put together like the matrix of all the differences and the practicalities for how to quantify those. And we actually spend a half day with the full finance team to kind of go line item by line item to explain like, these are the differences. These are how, you know, you practically need to adjust your schedules, and then actually pulling up the schedules real time and kind of manipulating them so that we're kind of working on the fly to get them through and quantifying those in that session. And because they're so hands-on with it, then they can kind of replicate that going forward without my support.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I was smiling while you were talking, because we kind of say the exact same thing, right? That we don't come with a huge team of consultants. We say drive in the bus and then you sit in this dark room and do a report and dump it on someone's desk. But it's really working together with the clients to ensure, first of all, they get the best solution that's fit for their purposes, but also that the client is able to continue on their own. And even if we deem they're not fit to continue on their own yet, we'll call it out. And because we don't want to stand at the end and say it didn't work because you weren't resourced enough, you didn't have the capabilities. It's really, really critical that any consulting engagement that you do, that you're sure that the client is ready to take over and step up when you're done. So I really like that idea of a GAAP summit, or a summit in any kind of consulting engagement. You really bring the whole team on board and saying, this is what we've done. Here's how it looked. Here's how you need to operate it going forward, so that they go through that before having to do it themselves. And then I'm sure they can also call you afterwards if there's questions, right? So
yeah,
that's a really great approach.
And that's a good point. Actually, something that you mentioned, just because I think sometimes I do too good of a job at that, and probably you can relate to this as well, that after I take those companies through these one-time projects, I had developed a way of kind of staying in touch with them as a very light touch, like fractional chief accounting officer, because I know a lot of scale-ups in Europe, if they have like 3 to 5 people in their finance team, they probably have good local technical accountants. And it's easy to upskill a person like that. And it's not complicated to learn IFRS or US GAAP. But if you have like new transactions or new contracts, you might still need help with certain things. But for the most part, when it's just business as usual, I've kind of failed at continuing to work with those clients because maybe I've done too good of a job at upskilling them that they say, hey, we don't need you anymore. So it's kind of the back and forth of that.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of like if you have a job, and let's say you're doing some job to improve some process or whatever, and you make yourself expendable, that's of course can be a little bit tough in the moment. But the credibility and the authority you build in the market is just worth so much more, right? So them saying, hey, you know, Katrina, you did a great job. We're self-sufficient now, but if someone in my network needs something, I'll refer you, right? That's also worth a lot, yeah. Let's say, in our world. So makes a lot of sense. So obviously we talked about you being a solo advisor as well, and that's being different from hiring a big firm. You talked a little bit about it, but can you explain a little bit more? What does those differences look like in practice?
So I'm trying to do things that are, first of all, scalable for me as one person and wanting to work on multiple projects at once, but are also scalable and kind of able to leverage my clients in a lot of cases, because I like to work with companies as early stage as I can possibly get in the door when they start to have these requirements. So yes, I have large companies like a subsidiary of Intel, for example, that's kind of getting ready to go public. But I want companies to come to me when they're like just doing their Series A and kind of thinking proactively about like, hey, let's set this up for success, even when we don't have these specific requirements yet. The challenge, of course, is always that these companies maybe don't really have the budget because they haven't done the capital raises yet. So I've, again, kind of listened to my clients in the market and adapted my process. And I price all of these very like incrementally. So I only scope discrete phases so that we know kind of what we're getting into, and I can get under the hood and do my evaluation and then say, okay, like these are what the differences are. If you want me to go through and do all of the, you know, trial balance adjustments for you, pair the financial statements, I can, but again, it comes piecemeal. So I guess that in and of itself can be different, because a lot of times when a large company would come in, they have to take the entire thing from A to Z, or it doesn't make sense to justify their fees and their overhead, et cetera. But another thing that I've been doing, even with that very incremental and fixed price approach, is I always present them with like three different options. And one of the options that I've kind of gravitated towards for these earlier stage companies is, you know, you don't necessarily need me to get up to speed and document everything that you're doing currently. Like I've said before, if you kind of get ahead of that yourself and you have some policy manuals already set up, I don't need to get up to speed on that. I don't need to document it as part of this like gap matrix that we put together. So sometimes I'll even, you know, have the companies come in and help me through the process of putting together that matrix, so that I don't have to spend that time, and then I can just really be layered in effectively to write up your US GAAP policies, explain the differences to you, go through the GAAP summit, et cetera. So that's something that I can bring more flexibility in the way that I'm working than a large company, you know, can, who has to justify their fees and, you know, the staff costs, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. It's like they have their approach, and if it's high stakes, big money involved, even they might not be the best at what they do, you sometimes just buy that approach because you're sure it's going to get worked through. And if it goes wrong, you have someone to kind of shoot back at. Whereas if you're a small company or a solo like you, then you don't get that, let's say, safety or security, but you get something that's more tailor-made and specific to you. And you also get, like you say, the options, right? So of course, one is not necessarily better than the other. It's really just about what's right for your company. But let's dig further into that. So let's talk about how to measure your fees or anything like that. But kind of, why do you think clients increasingly value expertise and agility over these large teams and the infrastructure that they bring?
I've had some good examples of this recently. The last couple of projects that I worked on came to me from, you know, a couple of different streams, but it was the same message. Like, we were looking for somebody who does this as a day job, and it was kind of like an aha moment for them to realize that somebody like that even existed, because they didn't realize it. And so that was really interesting for me, that kind of that thought is out there, that they see the need, but they don't really know where to go. So for me, you know, from a marketing perspective, it's just a matter of getting my name and my face out there. But yeah, from a fees perspective, you know, when I take a company through a proposal, I'm of course showing them a little bit of behind the scenes of like, this is the process that I follow. These are the tools that I use to do research and peer benchmarking. This is even just from a project management perspective, to show them how I set up like a Gantt chart and give them access to it, and they can see all the outstanding things. I think a lot of other advisory firms are maybe still kind of stuck in the Stone Age and tracking that in Excel. So even some of these small things kind of go a long way to showing that you're kind of tech savvy and know what you're doing. And just being able to show them that I have this framework set up, and even just kind of like this branded GAAP summit that I use, I think really helps to drill down that, you know, I am the right person for this, because this is essentially all that I do. So that's also setting me apart from the big firms, which I don't really think kind of emphasize that type of process and that structure. But other like potentially like freelancers or people who are kind of acting as a fractional CFO and trying to do this type of work are probably like billing themselves on an hourly basis as well, which to me, and I've tried to explain this to some potential clients as well, is like, then the client is the one that's taking on all the pricing risk, because you don't know how many hours it's going to take. And if you were a true expert in doing these conversions, you would be able to price them and say, like, this is how much it's going to cost because I've done this so many times. And so I think that sometimes it, from a client perspective, it can be hard to compare the, like, apples to oranges and say, like, hey, I have this big number over here that's a fixed price, but this hourly rate's only, you know, $100 or something. But you kind of have to frame it with that lens as well. Like, what are you really getting, and what does the way that they're pricing and proposing, like, say about how much of an expert they are in this process eventually?
I think that that's a really good point. And when you said this about them not even knowing someone like you existed, I was going to bring up this this fractional CFO or fractional anything kind of trend, because I think there's obviously there's a lot of fractional CFOs and accountants and controllers out there. But I think for what you do, I'm not saying none of them have ever gone through it, but it's really a very specific niche where you'd say, I can't just hire a fractional CFO to do this work. There would be a lot of risk in it, you know. Forget even about the pricing risk, because they don't do this as a day job, right? And this is, I'm going to say it again, complicated, right? It's not just creating a management report or setting up a forecast process, which of course also takes work and a lot of things needs to be done, but this really requires specialist expertise. So I don't think there's any fractional US GAAP conversion experts out there, right? So I think I can really understand the fact that, hey, does this person even exist? And I think that's also great why you started on LinkedIn and try to promote some of the thoughts there and share some of, sometimes, of course, complicated topics, but you know, really just to highlight, hey, there is actually a person like that out there. Here I am. So I can fully emphasize that, because don't just get a random fractional CFO or controller to do this. Get someone who really has that expertise. So just one more question on this one. So what is it that finance leaders often underestimate when they choose between a boutique advisor or firm and a big consulting company? What are some of the things that they maybe don't know about working with someone like you?
Well, I think a lot of it is around the price, but some of the way that pricing works out, and even though you think in your head, like, oh, I'm going to pay a big four or six figures, so it's going to be amazing work. Unfortunately, that's not always the case, because a lot of what you're paying for is like the partner level fees, but they're only doing a couple hours of oversight, and it's really more junior people that are doing this work. So even if they say they're, you know, cross-border experts, you know, you don't really know how much of an expertise you have within that specific team that you get, whereas with me, it's like you get me and that's kind of the end of the bargain there. So that can be a little bit of a struggle for companies to understand that. Even if they are going to some big firm because of their cross-border expertise, because they have offices in every country in the world, it doesn't mean that they're actually good at like collaborating between those countries and having a specific expert that's kind of sitting between all of them. So that can also, you know, add up quickly, because then you end up dealing with multiple offices and again, multiple people, and it just kind of can get a little bit of out of control. And of course, there are situations where if a huge corporate came to me and said that they, you know, needed a GAAP conversion for five entities in a month, I probably would not be the right person for that. And maybe they do legitimately need, you know, a big firm that can come in with more people. But I think in situations where, you know, you have a little bit more lead time to get ready for your first audit, to bring investors in the door, you're doing this proactively, you may actually have more time than you give yourselves credit for. And of course, part of what I do, because I'm not just putting out an hourly rate and saying, you know, this is it, take it or leave it, is that I can also play around with timelines. So if you do have something that's legitimately urgent and you need it done in like 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you know, I could potentially work with that in my schedule. And yeah, you're going to pay a little bit of a premium for it, but we can still do it. But on the other hand, if you have a little bit more time and you're willing to say like, oh, I just need this by the end of the year, well, that's great for both of us then, because you can, you know, kind of get a discount that way, and I can spread out the work in my calendar and essentially, you know, have room for more clients. And so that's something that I also play around with that I don't really see the bigger firms having done historically from my experience. And that could be because a lot of times they are also defaulting to hourly rates, which then you can't really build in the urgency or the calendar availability that way.
Yeah, I know. So obviously, you know, most big consulting companies, they all operate with a pyramid structure, right? So you have a few partners at the top, and then, you know, the more and more consultants, the way you go down. And we, so, you know, because even I get that question sometimes when I go out there to clients, right? I just sold an interim assignment not that many weeks ago, and I was out there talking to them beforehand, and we talked about different consulting projects as well. And then they asked, so is it you we are getting, or is it just some consultant on your team? And I completely get it, especially because I've been on the other side of the table as well, that of course they want to ensure that what they pay for is that expertise. And of course, if you are just one more than a few people in a consulting company, you are somehow needed to find a structure where you can involve your consultants. So we more go for what we call like a diamond shape. So we don't have too many juniors. We have a few seniors, of course, but then it's really that middle, like, you know, senior consultant managers, senior managers, because they have some expertise and they could know how to run these projects, but they are not necessarily subject matter experts yet. But that blend you can bring to it, it can still work. But I fully agree, you know, if you sit there with an expert in cross-border transactions in a big four and you agree everything, and then what they send out is three junior consultants, you would feel a bit tricked. So I fully see the difference you're describing there. Okay, let's change a little bit. So if I'm a CFO and I'm preparing for US investors or IPO readiness or just the US audit in the first place, what are the first steps that I should take to get ahead of, let's call it, an accounting transformation or conversion?
Well, like I said, I think as much as you can document ahead of time before bringing in somebody like me, just around what you're doing currently, your processes, your policies, kind of having that framework built up, that makes it easier regardless of what you're doing. Even if you're not going through an accounting conversion, it helps with other diligence exercises, onboarding new team members, kind of just the more documentation, like I said, the better. So that would definitely be my number one piece of advice, because then, like I said, there's a lot more flexibility in how you can engage with an expert when you have people on the team who are strong in your current processes. And typically, you know, you said accounting transformation, and that made me think also, because typically when I'm coming in through the GAAP conversion process itself, there's a lot of other things going on in the background, potentially ERP implementation to handle multi-GAAP, you know, multi-jurisdiction. And it can be distracting to the team to try to tackle both of those projects at the same time while you're also doing kind of business as usual accounting reporting. I like to try to say to at least do the first part of the GAAP conversion before you do the ERP implementation, mm-hmm. to assess the differences, at least so you understand like qualitatively how the structure of your accounts and things are going to change and where you need conversion ledgers. Because if you don't know that and how you need to translate from, you know, the statutory ledgers you need to keep up to what you need to do for your investors, it's going to be hard to build out the framework properly for that ERP. So these things, I mean, they can happen at the same time if needed, but it can be helpful to kind of set them up in that logical sequence as well.
Oh, that makes good sense. So just taking this back to the documentation, because you said you like to get it already at Series A, but even if it's Series B or Series C, I could imagine, and you can prove me wrong, that the level of process documentation that you get is maybe not of that high quality. So could it sometimes be working against you that they try to document their processes, but they haven't really done it in a way that it's useful? Or how good are they at doing that, so to speak?
Yeah, it's definitely a mix for what you see at that stage. But the thing that kind of helps me, again, to leverage the internal team, even if they have some sort of process documentation, but it's maybe not up to par. What I do is actually give them my framework of what I would do if I was doing the entire thing from A to Z. And I say, give them examples of like, this is how you fill in your current gap, to just make sure that they're addressing everything around like the initial recognition and valuation and subsequent recognition, to kind of have that set up. Because even you don't need like multiple pages of memos, but if you can at least address those topics in terms of like what a, you know, an accounting policy note would look like in your financial statements, that really helps me to be able to dive into that a lot quicker without having to go through all the nuances and details myself.
Oh, that's good, Chair. Just on the ERP, you know, absolutely makes sense. If you know you are going to go into the US or any other different countries for that matter, where you know there is more complex local accounting regulations, and you're thinking about upgrading ERP or doing something to your ERP landscape, then make sure you sort out the technical complex details first before you do something in ERP, because otherwise we all know it, right? Implement the ERP, and then you, let's say, go into the US afterwards. It's a lot of backtracking and a lot of things that are not working. And it's just going to be painful for years until you change to a new ERP system. So definitely a strong point there that CFOs should be watching out for. You know, in terms of going more into these projects, how should finance leaders balance keeping the day-to-day operations running smoothly while managing, with sometimes, I guess, could be a massive conversion project? How are you kind of advising or guiding them through that?
Yeah, that's a fair point, because going back to what I said at the beginning of the conversation, this is typically a one-time event that you don't necessarily need a full-time person in-house for, and you don't really necessarily need all of even the people in your finance team involved in the project, because it can be distracting from their day jobs. And especially, you know, I fully recognize that I'm only covering a very specific area when it comes to this type of cross-border transaction. There are a lot of other things going on in the background with ERPs and other contracts and things like that that the CFO is dealing with. And so I think that's why I've built the model that I have, to really be really good about the knowledge transfer aspects, so that even if I can, and you know, you want me to take the full project away and just do it because you want that peace of mind that it's kind of out of sight, out of mind as you're tackling all the other cross-border, you know, transactions and things that you're dealing with, I want to make sure that at the end of the day, I'm fully handing that back to you, and you know, making sure that the full team is at the end at least involved to be able to understand how it affects their day job now going forward. So that's something that I think can help you in terms of juggling all of those things. Sure, you could bring in a big firm that's like a jack of all trades that's going to handle all of the tax structuring, everything. But it can be a lot more effective, efficient, you know, cost effective, especially to actually bring in pointed experts for those different topics as you're working through them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you really do need experts in this field, right? And it's also a lot of risk if you do it wrong, right? You know, one thing is just to have to do a lot of rework, but you could also be subject to fines, and I'm sure it can be big fines, especially if it's bigger companies. So from your experience, what are some of the most overlooked risks when you do this cross-border conversion or technical accounting in general?
I think, kind of to your point, it's around the cost. Typically, clients that don't really want to pay for this, and they do try to kind of tough it up and do it in-house without the experience, they might think that they're fine just having a couple new adjustments in their ledger to like put leases on the balance sheet, for example. And they think that they're saving a lot of costs because they're saving, you know, tens of thousands of dollars from an accounting conversion expert. But the problem is that they don't necessarily quantify that against, okay, well, what happens when the auditors come in and they start to unpack what you've done from an accounting conversion perspective, and you don't have the right documentation in place to show how you've assessed and kind of documented the completeness of all of the differences that exist across your financial statements. So that can add then a lot of costs onto it, especially when you're dealing with US auditors, which are anyway more expensive than their European counterparts tend to be. So that's kind of a hidden cost that, you know, companies don't really think about if they're trying to, you know, just do the work in-house and not engage an advisor.
Yeah, so definitely keep track of those risks. Otherwise, it might get very, very expensive. So good input there. So we just have one question left, Katrina, and that's the question I asked to all guests on this new version of the show, let's say. So on the Hashtag Finance Master show, we define a finance master as someone who helps build world-class finance functions. So Katrina, how does your work contribute to that vision?
I think being world-class from an accounting and reporting perspective is, at the end of the day, going to be some sort of, you know, bringing in large investors or doing an exit. And whether that's to the U.S. or not, there's obviously a journey that you have to go through along the way to bring more sophistication to your accounting and reporting function to be able to get through audits so that you can bring in debt, equity, large stakeholders, anything that's going to just elevate not only the finance function, but the company as a whole onto the global stage. And I think that accounting conversions are sometimes can be seen as maybe a compliance exercise that you need to get through an audit, sure. But like I've kind of illustrated in the process that I follow, it's a lot more holistic to just bring that knowledge to your team and actually put in the right processes and procedures. So it's not just checking a box to say you're complying with US GAAP. It's really, you know, elevating the finance function to where it needs to be to bring in those investors.
Yeah, I'm always thinking of a LinkedIn post for you if you haven't done it already that says, here are the 10 benefits of doing a US GAAP conversion that you didn't think about. And then you can kind of list out all the things that that you get also while by doing the conversion. So yeah, just some food for thought there.
I like it, thanks.
So we're at the end, Katrina, but how can people reach you if they have technical accounting challenges or need to do US GAAP conversion? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Probably just LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Katrina Nachi on there, and I'm pretty active there. So you can always send me a DM or a connection request, and then we can take a chat offline.
Great. So Katrina, thanks a lot for being here today. Certainly appreciate that, learning a lot about some more technical aspects that I haven't personally worked with during my time in finance, but clearly something that is important because otherwise things can go wrong a lot. So thanks a lot for coming here and sharing your expertise.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're absolutely welcome. And also to everyone listening out there, thanks a lot for listening in, and hope to see you, hear you again next week. And until then, you can always reach out to LinkedIn to me as well if you want. But otherwise, we'll see you and hear you next week. So bye for now.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.